Hey everyone, welcome to the BTC Top Rope Talk podcast, episode 4 on February 14th, 2018. It's Valentine's Day. Treat your significant other, treat yourself, have a fun day. It's only the three of us, as of right now, me, Travis, and Ashton. Aaron is somewhere in the confines of Oklahoma with a numb mouth. He said he was ready to go for this podcast and then has gone missing. So if you see a man named Aaron anywhere, please return him to the Top Rope Talk podcast. So with that being said, it's me, Matt, from the confines of my dorm room. Ashton, what is up?
What is good, y'all?
Hell yeah. Travis, what is up?
Much.
Not much, he says. All right, let's get to it. So last week I spent a lot of time talking about the Honor Reigns Supreme show. I told you to go watch it. It was free on Facebook Live, Fight.tv, free on the Ring of Honor website. It was a free show for the Honor Club streaming service, a test event that will be showing live events and their whole back catalog, everything from their back catalog. So superstars like Austin Aries, Seth Rollins, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, every match you can think of will be on there. And there's plenty of great matches in Ring of Honor's history, such as CM Punk versus Samoa Joe. There's a triple threat match I just watched recently between Seth Rollins, Daniel Bryan, and Kenny Omega. There's good stuff. It's probably worth the subscription getting. But the Cabarrus Arena in Concord, North Carolina held Honor Reigns Supreme 2018. The first match of the night was the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson, taking on the best friends of Chucky T and Beretta. The Young Bucks won this by pinfall. The best spot in this match was Beretta pulling out a cigarette and him and Chucky Taylor beginning to smoke it until Matt Jackson super kicked it out of Trent Beretta's mouth, because BTE is drug free, y'all. Young Bucks win. The Kingdom of Matt Taven, TK O'Ryan, and Vinny Marcegella took on the Bullet Club's Cody Rhodes, Adam Page, and Marty Scurll. Cody Rhodes pinned Matt Taven via punch to the head while wearing a Ring of Honor on his hand. A decent six-man tag. This match was the renowned match of the night for many people. Jay Lethal versus Jonathan Gresham. Jay Lethal versus Jonathan Gresham. Figure four leg lock victory here. Great match. Really great match. We held the discussion last week that Jay Lethal has done all there is to do in Ring of Honor, and I still believe that opinion holds firm for a lot of us. But if there's a point where he can come in and just kind of start putting people over in Ring of Honor and New Japan, hey, so be it. The big news coming out of the Women of Honor was the Women of Honor tournament. Tennille Dashwood, formerly known as Emma in WWE, debuted here at Ring of Honor and was entered into the Women of Honor tournament. We will be covering that tournament as it takes place. Emma's going to have the real opportunity to show what she's capable of, something she hasn't done since NXT. If she comes in and wins it, I can see it already being a mixed reaction. Then again, Brandi Rhodes is in this tournament, and if Brandi Rhodes wins this, there's a real problem here. No offense to Brandi Rhodes if you're listening.
Huge problem
if she wins. So Tennille Dashwood had her first Ring of Honor match. She tag team with Mandy Leon to take on the tag team of Kelly Klein and Stacy Shadows. Tennille Dashwood pins Shadows via a strike to the head. So a lot of strikes to the head winning victories here. Take notes, Alexa Bliss. Dalton Castle and the boys showed up. Also, so did the Briscoes. The Briscoes came out to break the intermission, declaring they'll destroy the Ring of Honor fans' heroes. They brag about smashing Chris Sabin's head by dropping him on a chair. When Alex Shelley's music hits and he drops in behind the Briscoes and swipes them with his tag title belt, but is overpowered. Jay Briscoe lands a J-driller on Shelley after they wipe out the security team that come to his aid. A fan even gets his Briscoe sign ripped in half. So, good heel stuff from the Briscoes here. Dalton Castle goes to shake hands in line with the Code of Honor and is attacked. However, he clears the ring and stands tall, and we go to another intermission. Following the intermission, we had a six-man tag team match. SoCal Uncensored, Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky took on the Ring of Honor World Champion Dalton Castle and the boys, Brendan and Brent Tate. Brendan Tate pinned, Scorpio Sky pinned Brendan Tate with the final answer here. Kenny King stands atop the ramp, tapping his wrist as he counts down his time to getting a shot at the World TV title that Silas Young holds. Silas Young defeated Josh Woods via Misery in a non-title match. Kenny King took on Shane Taylor. Pinfall via Royal Flush, and Punishment Martinez defeated Flip Gordon with a choke slam. It was a good show. Like I said last week, it wasn't going to be a world beater show or anything. It was generally good. If you haven't seen it, it's still on Facebook Live, or it'll still be on the Ring of Honor Wrestling website. It'll still be on Facebook Live, and it'll still be on Fight TV. Go watch it. It's a good show. It's free wrestling. Can't stress this enough. And it's a nice test event to see how the Honor Club streaming service will go. So, good for them. They had a good show. Something that came out of that was the Honor Rising 2018 Japan cards, the dual cards for Ring of Honor and New Japan. These matches will be taking place on February 23rd and the 24th. So we'll just go over these real quick. For the February 23rd show, it's going to be Toa Hanare and Katsuya Kitamura versus Bullet Club's Bad Luck Fale and Yujiro Takahashi in a tag team match. Katsuya Kitamura should be going on a excursion soon. I don't know where he'd be going on excursion to. Most likely Mexico. Naito went to Mexico, didn't he? Yeah, he did. CMLL. Six-man tag team match, Jushin Thunder Liger, Cheeseburger, and Delirious versus the Bullet Club's Tama Tonga, Tangaloa, and Hikaluo. This match I'm kind of excited to see. Juice Robinson, David Vinley versus the Young Bucks. For those who haven't seen New Japan, Juice Robinson, obviously CJ Parker from NXT, he's improved so much. So much. You have to go check out a Juice Robinson match if you haven't.
If you guys really want to see Juice Robinson, check out the last G1 climax. He has improved a lot.
Yes. He had great matches with Kenny Omega and with Cody in the G1 climax. And I think, yeah, he's also had a great match with Kazuchika Okada. Go check out some Juice Robinson stuff. He is very impressive. If all you know about him is CJ Parker, my apologies. Triple threat match. Kushida versus Romu Takahashi versus Flip Gordon. That ought to be a fun little flippy shit match. Six-man tag team match. Dalton Castle, the Ring of Honor World Champion teams with Jay Lethal and Rizuki Taguchi to take on Chaos. And it will be Chaos's IWGP United States Champion Jay White, Beretta, and Chucky T, the best friends. There will be a never open weight championship match between Hirooki Goto and the Beer City Bruiser. And the main event of this show will be a six-man tag team match as the Golden Lovers, Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, team up with Chase Owens to take on the Bullet Club's Cody Rhodes, Hangman Page, and Marty Scurll. On February 24th, this is what the card looks like. Toa Hanare versus the Beer City Bruiser in a singles match. There will be a six-man tag team match. Jay Lethal, Juice Robinson, and David Finlay versus the Bullet Club's Yujiro Takahashi, Chase Owens, and Hikaru. There will be a tag team match, Flip Gordon and Rizuki Taguchi versus the LIJ, the Los Ingobernables, De Japón, Hiromi Takahashi, and Bushi. A never-open-weight six-man tag team championship match, Bullet Club's Bad Luck Fale, Tama Tonga, and Tangaloa take on the champ, or they are the champions, they take on the challengers of Jushin Thunder Liger, Cheeseburger, and Delirious. We have a six-man tag team match, Chaos's Jay White, Yoshihashi and Chucky T take on the Bullet Club's Hangman Page and the Young Bucks. A Ring of Honor World Championship match will be taking place on the 24th show. It's a 60-minute time limit match as Dalton Castle defends his title against Trent Beretta. And the most hyped match of the weekend, is a tag team match main event on the 24th between the Golden Lovers of Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi and the Bullet Club's Cody and Marty Scurll. It's going to be a great two nights of wrestling, especially that Golden Lovers versus Bullet Club match. It should be really fun to watch.
Where is it going to be at?
Where is it going to be at? Shit, I don't really know. I can check up on that in a few minutes. I forgot where the card is going to be at. Because they just had a show in Osaka, so I don't want to say Osaka, but I'll check on it. With that being said, the big news to come out of the New Japan Osaka show, we'll get to that before we cover the New Beginning show. We'll cover Raw here next, but before we cover the New Beginning show, the big news to come out was that Rey Mysterio will be taking on Jushin Thunder Liger at the Strong Style Evolve show March 25th in Long Beach, California. The show is already sold out. All 5,000 seats sold out. But that is a dream match for some. It's the first time these two men will have faced off in 22 years. The last time they faced off was in Starrcade 1996. So it's going to be interesting to see how 22 years has done the men. Jushin Thunder Liger is a shell of his old self, but he can still go easily. And Rey Mysterio almost looks better than ever, so it's going to be a fantastic match either way. Let's start.
I would just like to say that if Rey Mysterio joins New Japan, you're fucked hearts. Continue.
For those who are wondering, Rey Mysterio has not signed a New Japan contract. This is a one-off. It's just a one-off. It's the same thing as the Royal Rumble. No one needs to get worried. By the way, it's in Tokyo. It's at the Korakuen Hall for your honorizing show. Those two nights. But Rey Mysterio, by the way, no contract. Nothing's been signed with WWE, nothing's been signed with Impact, nothing's been signed with New Japan. It's a one-off match. It's his first ever New Japan match, taking the moment, live on Access TV, March 25th. Let's talk about Raw. Raw was the best Raw of the year, by a long shot.
Really?
We're a month and a half into the show. We're a month and a half into the year, so that's only 6 weeks of Raws to work with. But this is also a Raw that has had Raw 25 this year, and this blew that out of the water, obviously. In fact, I'd be inclined to say the other four Raws also blew Raw 25 out of the water, but that's not the point. We kicked off the show with John Cena, who says, "Everyone can feel the energy from being on the road to WrestleMania because what it can mean to someone's career." He says this line, "It can bring legends back from the dead or act as the most important moment of a wrestler's life." He's hint, hint, for those who didn't catch the line. He says tonight he is facing the truth that he must win the Elimination Chamber, otherwise he might not have a shot at WrestleMania. He claims that he has a history of overcoming the odds and the Elimination Chamber won't be different. The Miz comes out to interrupt and reminds him it isn't 2013 anymore, it is 2018, the year of the Intercontinental Champion. Miz says that Cena has spent so much time in Hollywood he can't figure out fantasy from reality. Miz claims he will win the chamber and then beat Brock Lesnar, becoming the first Universal and Intercontinental Champion. Cena jokes about Miz's chances against Brock, but Miz says that he'll outsmart Brock when Cena would try to outpower Lesnar because he will cross lines that Cena won't. Miz reminds Cena that it wouldn't be the first time he outsmarted someone in the main event of WrestleMania. He did it to Cena himself back in 2011. Cena challenges the Miz to a match tonight with the stipulation that the loser has to enter the Elimination Chamber first. Miz laughs at the idea and has Boo and Curtis sneak attack Cena, then accepts the challenge while Cena is laid out. Kurt Angle, the Raw GM, comes out and makes the match official, but bans Bo and Curtis from ringside. So the first match of the show is John Cena versus The Miz with the stipulation that the loser enters the Elimination Chamber first. Great match. Kicked off the show right. Finish of the match was an avalanche attitude adjustment from the top rope to The Miz. But The Miz, the past 4 weeks, has been on a tear, man. He's having the best 4 weeks of his career. Two great matches against Roman Reigns, a great match against Apollo Crews, a great match against John Cena here tonight, a much better match from Cena than the one against Finn Balor, shockingly. So, good stuff. Anyone else have anything to add?
Can I say that my boy Miz is finally getting the respect he deserves? Even though I did think he was a punk-ass white boy back in, like, 2007, 2006.
That's fair.
He kind of changed my views on him when he main evented Mania. It took a big-ass jump on him for it then. He wasn't ready for something like that. I don't think so. Well, okay, the moment was right. They did it right. The cash-in was right. But to have a main event WrestleMania, it was a little bit out there. But now, I easily can see him main eventing on Mania. His promo work is absolutely godly. He's probably the best talker in the damn business right now, except for Paul Heyman and somebody who won't be named ever again. So, yeah, basically, I feel that my boy Miz is finally getting the respect he deserves. He's worked hard for it, and I honestly don't want him losing the Intercontinental title anytime soon, period.
Yeah, he's obviously brought the prestige up of the Intercontinental Championship. Sometimes it does end up feeling like an afterthought, but the Miz with one promo can really bring it right back home. But like I said, the work he's been doing the past 4 weeks has been absolutely fantastic. It's some of the best work of his career. Roman Reigns ended up being a great opponent for him. Him and Cena are kind of hit and miss with matches. Monday night was a hit, obviously. He had a great one with Apollo Crews, but I already know that Apollo Crews can have a great match with anyone. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Miz... I don't think The Miz is going to last the whole chamber or anything. I don't know if he'll be around when the last entrant, Elias, comes in. But I think he's going to have a good 30 to 40-minute performance in the chamber and really solidify his performance as the Intercontinental Champion. We get a promo from Oak and Matt Hardy, who says he has a second chance to achieve his destiny, but has to beat three other vessels who have a second chance because the seven deities have given him the power to make them obsolete. He says he will turn the elimination chamber into the deletion chamber. Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson come out and say that the Revival may claim to be tag team specialists, but all they are a couple of... What's the word I'm looking for, Travis?
Nerds.
Nerds! Finn Balor had...
It really takes two nerds to know exactly what a nerd is. Burn, continue.
You shut the hell up. I'll mute you so quick. Finn had his... God damn it. Finn had his chance last week with Carl Anderson, but Gallows wants his shot this week. When they head out for their match, the Revival attack them from behind as Dash Wilder kind of clips Gallows' knee. Kind of falls. It was kind of funny. Anyway, we get the match between the Revival and the Club. Shatter Machine wins it. So for all those people who were saying the Revival were dead and buried after Raw 25, that is two wins in 3 weeks for the Revival. Three wins if you count the Royal Rumble pre-show. Forever the Revival, baby. Kurt Angle. This was easily the weirdest part of the show. Kurt Angle comes out to give an update on Jason Jordan's condition. First, he announces that at Elimination Chamber, the newest Raw member, Ronda Rousey, will be at the Elimination Chamber to sign her Raw contract, which gets boos and cheers. This is going to be further explained when he gives the reaction to this. He says that Jason Jordan had neck surgery last week, and he will miss WrestleMania, to which the crowd cheered vehemently. When the crowd cheers that he says this, he says that people should be ashamed for being happy that a person is hurt and can't compete at WrestleMania. This got yes chance. The crowd of San Jose, California was absolutely pathetic Monday night. They also chanted CM Punk during the main event, which was a killer main event, and then proceeded to chant "This is awesome" 2 minutes later. The crowd was absolutely pathetic. If you're going to go enjoy...
That crowd was trying to garner attention.
Yeah. So bad. And just, if you're going to go, make up your mind on what the fuck you're there to do. If you're there to put yourself over, do it. If you're there to watch the show and cheer on the superstars, do it. Don't do a middle road where we're chanting CM Punk 1 minute, and then we're chanting this is awesome at the match in the ring the next. Alright? You can't fucking take both roads, because it really pisses people off. It pissed me off.
Okay, guys. San Jose, don't do that again, because you pissed off Matt.
Fuck off, San Jose. For the people listening to this in San Jose, California, I bet your town is a great town. I'm just talking to the wrestling fans in the arena that night. I have an uncle that lives in San Jose, so I can't really say shit. Seth Rollins comes out and apologizes for being so hard on Jason and says he can relate to being on top of the world before an injury ruins everything. However, it made him realize that you can't take WrestleMania for granted, and this year Seth doesn't have a title, Money in the Bank, or even a match at Elimination Chamber. Kurt offers him another shot at the tag titles, but Seth shoots down the idea, saying he just doesn't want it to be part of Raw. He wants to be the man of Raw. He wants Lesnar, and he wants the Universal Championship WrestleMania. Kurt says he likes Seth.
It'd be an absolutely best, one of the best matches ever if he actually gave it a chance. Continue.
Yeah, their last match was very disappointing. That's all I have to say. Kurt says he likes Seth's enthusiasm, but he can't just cancel the second chance Fatal 4-Way tonight. To that, Seth asks for the match to be made a Fatal 5-Way and for him to get a chance to earn his way into the chamber. Kurt says it isn't fair to the other four already in the match. Seth says he has been putting his body on the line each week for months, and even though Jason has to miss WrestleMania, he doesn't have to also. Angle asks the crowd if he should give Seth the shot, and he inserts Seth into the match. Bray Wyatt comes onto the screen, responds to Seth entering the match, and says that neither he nor the other three competitors deserve a second chance. He calls Matt Hardy a sick man in need of help and says that he can help everyone who are being chased by a shark. He claims that he will win the Elimination Chamber for the second year in a row and go on to beat Brock Lesnar. Bayley versus Sasha Banks in Bayley's hometown of San Jose, California. Great match. Another great one for Sasha Banks. Another great one for Bayley. Just continuing on from their NXT days. Not as great as their NXT matches, of course, but it's something I'd give about 3.5 stars, 3.75. The finish... Sasha Banks was on the second rope. Bayley climbs up. Bayley to belly from the top. 1, 2, 3. And Bayley gets a hometown victory, which seems to be rare in World Wrestling Entertainment. After the match, Bayley and Sasha are at their feet and are staring each other down, and it looks like Sasha's about to attack Bayley when Nia Jax comes from the side of the screen and mows them down. To this, I pose one question to the two of you. How does Nia Jax sneak up on two people?
Hey, whoa. How does a Nia Jax sneak up on two women?
On two women. This is all I'm asking. And the crowd didn't even seem to do anything either. This was a true sneak up. There was no crowd, right before she hits him. It's just she appeared.
I mean, she was looking right at her and didn't do it. What, she moved Sasha?
She moved Sasha out of the way, just like a friend would, to take the hit. But that was like a second after Nia was already in the ring. I'm just saying, this is not a mean way. I'm just saying, Nia Jax is a force to be reckoned with. How does she sneak up on people?
Shut up, bro. You are so wrong.
I'm just saying, though. I'm not trying to mean this in a bad way. I'm just saying, like, people should be able to see Nia Jax coming into the ring. People should also be able to see Sasha Banks coming into the ring, but I mean, I'm just trying to make a point.
Oh, you're so wrong, bro. Nia, if you're listening to this, I love you. I would take your big ass down in a minute, but I have nothing to do with L. Matthew Hayden said. I promise you, I don't know what the hell is wrong with him. I don't want to be squashed, so just exclude me. Whatever the hell this man says. Thank you.
I just had to pose a question. Okay. Whew. After the match, she's about to hug Sasha when Nia Jax runs out and lays out both of them. Nia is interviewed by Charlie Caruso after this, and she says she did this because Sasha and Bayley brought Asuka to her limit, and she just laid both of them out in seconds, and then gave them Samoa drops after. She leaves, promising to end Asuka's streak at the Elimination Chamber. Backstage, Seth Rollins runs into Roman Reigns. Roman says he hopes Seth enters the chamber so he can eliminate him like he did at the Royal Rumble. Sheamus and Cesaro combine, tell him not to get his hopes up since he has failed constantly lately. Cesaro calls Seth a lousy partner whose partners are likely in physical therapy together. Roman mocks Cesaro for getting his teeth knocked out by the Shield and challenges Sheamus to a match tonight. First of all, Cesaro got his teeth knocked out against the Hardys, but I mean, for storyline continuity, I suppose we can go with the Shield. Women's tag team match, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville took on Mickie James and Alexa Bliss after a backstage segment where Alexa and Mickie talked for 5 minutes longer than they needed to. Mandy Rose pinned Mickie James with a beautiful suplex facebuster, shades of the Awesome Kong, shades of Karma. That's all that really needs to be said. It was a nothing match beyond that. Titus interviews Apollo Crews backstage. He claims he won't be deleted. He'll create. Bray won't eat him. Seth won't burn him down. And he doesn't need to get into the Balor Club. And Dana Brooke looks at the numbers and concludes that Crews can't lose. Spoiler alert for those who haven't watched Raw and are listening to the podcast. Apollo Crews did lose. After this was the greatest segment in all of Raw in 2018, possibly all of Raw in 2017, and possibly all of Monday Night Raw's 25-year history. Elias comes out and talks about how he beat Braun and Cena last week and will win the Chamber and beat Lesnar at Mania. He says that this week he has a new song, The Elimination Chamber Blues. He tries to start but instantly gets booed and threatens not to finish if they continue. He runs down the other opponents in the chamber saying no one believes in Roman, that he wrote songs for Maurice and not Miz. The future is him, not Cena, and he's going to burn down Braun's dream. Then we hear, ladies and gentlemen, Braun Strowman. This man appears on the stage, sitting on a stool with the spotlight and a mic. He leaves the stool and comes back with a massive double string bass. This man clubs at the strings on the bass 7 times before breaking them completely. He then starts singing that he isn't finished with Elias and that once the song is over, Elias is going to get these hands. Now that Braun has realized he broke the bass, he brings it down to the ring to beat Elias with it. Elias tries to keep Braun on the outside with his guitar but agrees to meet Braun if they both put down their instruments. Braun enters without his and Elias tries to get some offense in but is quickly overpowered even when he grabs the guitar. Elias tries to crawl up the ramp after the running power slam, but Braun grabs the bass, walks to Elias, swings it over his head, and strikes him down with the fury of a thousand monster among men.
Most attempted murder. I'm just saying.
There's been plenty of times where Braun has committed attempted murder. This one might have been the best, is all I'm saying.
I just gotta say, Braun, why you gotta hurt people like every week? Like, I love it. It's good TV, not gonna lie. Like, you gotta kill every superstar some way. star. Like, is it? Can we have a Raw roster, please? We just need a Raw roster. That's all we need. We just need like 10 guys and just be healthy. That's it. Just don't kill nobody else, please.
All I gotta say is I think this genuinely stands up there in time with with Stone Cold and Kurt Angle's trucks as the greatest Raw moment in history. Braun Strowman may be God himself. Finn Balor says he doesn't care what his opponents want. He just wants to get into the Elimination Chamber and being one step closer to the Universal title he never lost. Finally, we have our Fatal 5-Way match for Elimination Chamber qualifier. Apollo Crews, Matt Hardy, Bray Wyatt, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor. What's up?
Roman Reigns versus Sheamus.
Oh, shit, yeah. And that was a good match, too. Roman Reigns versus Sheamus. Good match.
Happy finish. Good match.
I just want to say that the last time Roman Reigns and Sheamus fought with something with meaning was in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the night after TLC 2015. Roman Reigns defeated Sheamus for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship and got thank you Roman chants in Philadelphia. I'm just saying there is a right way to book this man. It's been proven.
That is the truth. That really is.
It's been proven there is a way to book this man. All right, now on to the Fatal 5-Way. Good match. Roman Reigns won with a spear as Sheamus was going for a bro kick. He caught him in midair. Rollins, Balor, Cruz, Hardy, Wyatt, Fatal 5-Way. Apollo Crews was the most impressive part of this Fatal 5-Way. He had a lot of great spots. A lot of opportunities where he got a near fall, and the crowd was really baited because they thought at a couple times Apollo Crews might be heading to the chamber on a shock. A spoiler alert, Bray Wyatt is not heading to his second Elimination Chamber victory because he went for a Tower of Doom on the top rope. Rollins and Balor pick him down with a double powerbomb. They both take a leg and they both pin him. Rollins and Balor go off the air wondering which man is going to the Elimination Chamber. Kurt Angle goes on Facebook Live after the show and says, "We're making history. This year it will be a 7-man Elimination Chamber match. Both Seth Rollins and Finn Balor are entering." So your 7 men for the Elimination Chamber match are John Cena, Braun Strowman, Elias, The Miz, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, and I'm missing one more. God damn it.
Elias?
No, just I said Roman Elias. Reigns. I missed Roman Reigns.
Well, I won't go there.
I missed Roman Reigns, even though he was winning. So, there you go.
Let me guess who's eating the pin in that match? The final pin?
Oh, I was going to say 6 other men are going to be eating it, but I mean...
I'll say Elias, but I don't think he's going to last the whole time.
Oh, I don't think he's going to last the whole time. I think Cena's going to take it.
I almost think Cena, too. I was going to say Braun, but I think they're trying to have Braun be the foil to Roman. Braun Strowman is 4-1 in his career against Roman Reigns. So I think they're trying to have him be the foil to Roman, and pinning him in the chamber with a spear will kind of... It won't nullify that completely, but it'll just kind of do away the damage they have done.
The only way I would do that is if he took, like...
If he took, like, 7 spears. If he took, like, 7 spears, I'd be okay with it.
I think the way that they're going to eliminate Braun is, like, everyone's going to just do, like, a sequence of their finishers and just pile on top of him and pin him.
Ah, the old Big Show method. Actually, the old Cena method. Everyone eliminated Cena that way. The spear into the 619 into the... Or the six, code breaker into the 619 into the spear. I remember that. That was the year... I don't even remember who won that chamber now. I want to say Edge did.
Edge won the chamber.
But Edge won the chamber? Okay. So, yeah, this match is pretty much worthless anyway, because unless Braun Strowman tips the chamber over, that's all I'm watching for, and if that doesn't happen, then I'm canceling my subscription. But, it's a joke, everyone. It's okay to laugh. All right, let's go to SmackDown. SmackDown Live last night was okay.
I gave it a good two, actually.
I said in the chat last night, if Sami Zayn and Dolph Ziggler ends up being a good match, I'll give it a good rating. And it ended up being a pretty good match, so I'll say it's a good show. The rest of it was okay. We were going to kick off the show with Baron Corbin and Dolph Ziggler in a match to determine who was joining the triple threat match at Fastlane for the WWE title between Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and AJ Styles. The first 20 minutes of this show, to me, was a sign that Road Dogg did not know what to do with the first 20 minutes of the show. Because Baron Corbin and Dolph Ziggler got the shit beat out of them for these first 20 minutes. And it went on, and it went on, and it went on, and it went on. And it went on. It was a long beatdown for both men. Dolph Ziggler was the first man to come out. Baron Corbin's music hit twice before the camera rushes backstage and they see Owens and Zayn getting him. They eventually come out to take out Ziggler in the crowd area. Corbin limps his way down the ramp to earn himself another beatdown. And then we weirdly transition into Charlotte versus Sarah Logan. Not going to say this was a good match. This was an okay match. First 2 minutes were actually good. They were doing some good grappling sequences the first 2 minutes. The finish of this match was the natural selection to Sarah Logan. I want to describe the process and what happened in this natural selection. So Charlotte goes for the natural selection. She kind of misses Sarah. She hits it enough to where it's believable, but she kind of misses her. Sarah proceeds to spike herself on her head. Just forehead first into the mat, and just all of her weight is on top of her head at 1 second, and then just clump to the ground. If you haven't seen this spot, please go watch, because I was pretty sure Sarah Logan died. There is no way me describing it does this spot justice. It was very interesting. But anyway, Charlotte defeating Sarah Logan heads into a 6-women tag team match where the Riot Squad faces Charlotte, Naomi, and Becky Lynch next week on SmackDown.
Most perfectly sold natural selection ever. I'm sorry.
It was something. It was very, 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 very well something. Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan proceeded to make 2 main events for the night, Baron Corbin versus Kevin Owens and Dolph Ziggler versus Sami Zayn. I fell asleep for Baron Corbin versus Kevin Owens. It was my 15-minute cap nap, so I watched it on Hulu this morning. It was a good match, and Baron Corbin was getting cheered for the majority of this match. Corbin defeated Owens with the End of Days and made it a fatal 4-way match for the WWE Championship. We had a segment with a bunch of pancakes and the New Day and Benjamin and Gable in the ring. I was still kind of drowsy, so a lot of this kind of went over my head. The New Day, Big E and Kofi Kingston defeated Benjamin and Gable with the Midnight Hour to Shelton Benjamin. They declared Fat Tuesday Pancake Tuesday. So it's Pancake Tuesday every Tuesday on SmackDown Live, folks. And finally, our other main event, Dolph Ziggler versus Sami Zayn. Very good match. Best spot in this match was Sami Zayn giving Ziggler a top rope exploder suplex. Very cool spot. Ziggler with a super kick out of nowhere pins Zayn center of the ring. Dolph Ziggler versus Baron Corbin versus Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn versus AJ Styles in a fatal 5-way match for the WWE Championship in March at Fastlane. Good show. Not as good as Raw. Raw kind of gave the expectations high there. Mixed match challenge show. Another first round matchup. Elias and Bayley with their charity AmeriCares take on the team the husband and wife team of Rusev and Lana, with their charity being Global Citizen. Live on Facebook Watch. The winners of this match were Rusev and Lana when Bayley was up on the top rope, and Lana took a leg, dragged Bayley down, her head hit the top turnbuckle. The top turnbuckle was not even exposed. She just hit the turnbuckle, crumpled to the floor, and Lana pinned her. And then Rusev saying Lana is the best, Lana number one. The main thing to take out of this show is it's non-canon. It's not a reflection of the Raw or SmackDown storyline, so Bayley losing like that, in a sense, does not really matter. It's not going to be acknowledged Monday or anything like that. It's just a fun charity show. Still really weird. Rusev wearing his wife's gear made it a little bit weirder.
A lot weirder.
That's all I got to say about that. 205 Live, another great episode of 205 Live this week. Last week's winners were Kalisto and Roderick Strong entering the 205 Live zone. The first match was Mark Andrews versus Akira Tozawa. I honestly thought this was the weakest match of the tournament so far, but I also thought it was a very good match, so that speaks to the strength of the tournament. Mark Andrews won with his shooting star press off the top rope, I believe. Right? Travis?
No. Did he?
I kind of zoned out the finish when I watched it. Maybe he won.
Because I hit a trouble in paradise, but Andrews reversed it into an Oklahoma roll and won.
Okay, so he won via roll up. My bad. Usually he wins with the shooting star press, so I just kind of blocked it out of my head. I kind of feel bad for Akira Tozawa. This man is a man that beat Neville for the Cruiserweight title. I think he deserves a lot better, but Mark Andrews is a very talented competitor, so it is what it is. Someone has to lose. Drew Gulak versus Tony Nese. I watched this match with full attention. It was one of my favorite matches. It's probably my second favorite match of the tournament. For those who haven't seen CZW Drew Gulak, you got a taste of that in this match. He was very vicious. There was a point where he grabbed Tony Nese's beard and just slapped the ever-living shit out of him. Something you'd see in New Japan. But this was Drew Gulak where he threw Nese like head first into the shoulder, into the announce table like three times. Came in the ring, gave him a straight jacket suplex, and then put him in the Dragon Sleeper, and Tony Nese was done. It was a great match, like genuinely a great match, and my second favorite of the tournament behind Kalisto and Dorado. But next week, our two matches are Buddy Murphy versus Jack Gallagher. So NXT's best kept secret is coming to the 205 Live show. I love Buddy Murphy. I can't put over Buddy Murphy enough. I think he was not wasted in a tag team with Wesley Blake, but I think his talents are more suited toward a single style. Of course, him and Wesley Blake, and being managed by Alexa Bliss, won the NXT tag titles a couple years ago. Them and the Vaudevillains had a great program down there. That really speaks to how much things can change in a couple years. Wesley Blake is still signed, but he's not really seen beyond NXT live events. As for the Vaudevillains, we have Aiden English paired up with Rusev, and Simon Gotch is working the indies. So we have that match, and we have, who's Mustafa Ali taking on next week? I forgot.
It's Mustafa Ali and Jack Gallagher.
It's Ali and Gallagher, and it's Buddy Murphy, and who?
He's barred from wearing a suit, which is fun.
Yeah, Drake Maverick goes backstage. He says, "Nice suit. I own two of them myself, but you need to stop wrestling in that suit." I was like, okay. I love Drake Maverick as a 205 Live general manager. He makes it feel real. He makes me feel invested for some reason. He made me feel invested in TNA as Rockstar Spud, too. He just makes it feel like he's actually making the decisions and there's not a writer making the decisions. I don't know. It's kind of fun. What's the other match? Buddy Murphy and who? No answer.
Sorry. It was Aria Daivari.
Oh, it's Aria Daivari. Okay. Buddy Murphy and Aria Daivari, Mustafa Ali and Jack Gallagher next week. I thought it was honestly the two mixed up, so that's why I got confused. Yeah, I've been confused a lot this show. Sorry for the mishaps I've had this show. It's been a long day.
You lost the two first-round matches, too.
Yeah, so. Last two first-round matches. They are not doing these in chronological order. We don't have a bracket or anything, so they could mix-match whoever they want. Say, Kalisto versus Roderick Strong, or Kalisto versus, I assume Buddy Murphy wins next week, Kalisto versus Buddy Murphy, Kalisto versus Cedric Alexander. They could go any way they want with this. We haven't seen a bracket or anything. If they do go in chronological order, I mean, that's fine, but they have the full discretion to, like, mix and match how they want with how we haven't seen a bracket yet. I watched the New Beginning in Osaka show for New Japan. I just wanted to talk about this real quick. Not going to spend too much time on it, but obviously, we already talked about the big news coming out of it, Rey Mysterio versus Jushin Thunder Liger. So, the matches on the show, Yuji Nagata versus Katsuya Kitamura. This is Katsuya Kitamura's sixth match in his seventh match proving series before he goes on his excursion, and Nagata beat Kitamura. It was a good match, nothing special. Kitamura is one of the better young lions that have come out of the dojo as of late, so I think he could be something special. Suzuki Guns, El Desperado, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru defeated Roppongi 3K's Sho and Yo. Good match. Nothing really special I'm going to be talking about here until later. Eight-man tag team match, Togi Makabe, Michael Elgin, Kushida, and Ryuzuki Taguchi defeated Suzuki Guns, Minoru Suzuki, Takahashi, Iizuka, Taichi, and Taka Michinoku. We'll talk about what Taichi did in a little bit. Taichi's going up to the heavyweights, boys. Six-man tag team match. Chaos's IWGP United States Champion Jay White, Toru Yano got a win on this show. Congratulations to my man. And Tomoharu Ishii defeated Juice Robinson, David Finlay, Tona Hanari. No, Yano did not do the pinfall. It was Jay White pinning Toa. Right after that, Rey Mysterio issued his challenge. Bushi versus Jido in a singles match. Bushi won. Tetsuya Naito faced Yoshihashi. This was one of Yoshihashi's better matches. I'm not the biggest Yoshihashi fan by any means, but Naito could probably get a four-star match out of a fucking broom. So, I mean, it was really good. Yeah. Pretty much. So it was a really good match. Just as Naito was about to walk backstage, Taichi hits him with his microphone stand and drags him to the back. So my boy Taichi is going to the heavyweights. Take on Tetsuya Naito. Good for him. Will Ospreay defended his IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship against Hiromu Takahashi. Ospreay won. I predicted that this would be the match of the night. And it was a very good match, but I was wrong. I'll talk about why I was wrong in a bit. Hirooki Goto defended his NEVER Openweight Championship against Evil. Goto won. Good match. IWGP Heavyweight Championship match. Kazuchika Okada defended his title against Sonata. Very good match. Best match on the card. But before I get to the ending here, I have to talk about Okada. We've hit the point in Okada matches where the first 20 minutes really don't matter. Once we get past first 20 minutes, that's when the near falls come. But we've hit a point in Okada matches where anything before the tombstone doesn't really matter in a match. And that kind of sucks, because this dude's having one of the better reigns in wrestling history. I think something that needs to happen during the G1 series is he needs to have a couple of 10-minute matches. Just quicker finishes. Because I get the story that they're trying to do. He's such a dominant champ because he has the stamina to outlast everyone. Everyone's given their best shot, and after 30 minutes, Okada's still standing and his opponent isn't. But, like, I don't think Sonata should have went 32 minutes with Kazuchika Okada. Maybe 20. And then Okada... I just don't think Sonata should have went 32 minutes with him. I like Sonata. Just, I don't think that way. I guess. I thought this would have been a much shorter match than it was. This is a match that I think needs to be 30 minutes, though. The IWGP Heavyweight Champion, Kazuchika Okada, challenged the Junior Heavyweight Champion, Will Ospreay, for the New Japan Cup anniversary show, or the New Japan anniversary show, not the New Japan Cup. This is the show before the New Japan Cup. So it's going to be Kazuchika Okada as Will Ospreay comes up to the heavyweights for one night only in a champion versus champion match. Speaking of Will Ospreay, he was on Talk as Jericho today, and he said that WWE did approach him in contract negotiations, but he did not accept, and he declined fairly quickly those negotiations. He's happy where he is in New Japan. He doesn't like the WWE schedule at all. And, yeah. And I'm going to tend to agree that he shouldn't be wrestling a WWE style. And I'm going to, not necessarily the style, but the schedule, until he gets his injuries taken care of. Because Will Ospreay is still working with, like, 5 injuries. And I don't know how he does these insane matches that he ends up doing. But, yeah. It's going to be Okada versus Ospreay, and I think that's going to be a fantastic match that deserves to go as long as it does.
Three things to say. Okada versus Okada was not matching tonight for me to remove versus Spray. It truly was, not going to lie.
Oh, I mean, I don't blame you for having that viewpoint. I just thought, I don't know, something clicked with me more with Okada and Sonata, and I didn't even think it was that great of a match. I don't know, I just thought this was kind of a weaker show than I thought it would be, honestly.
Oh, yeah, it was a way weaker show than I thought it was going to be, too. But WWE, I honestly don't want to see it at all. I don't. I think he's absolutely perfect where he is. They're just going to stick him into the cruiserweight division like they're going to do with every high flyer in the world who's under 200 pounds and absolutely put them there and not let them go anywhere else.
Yeah.
I agree. Like, he's going to be, like, the next level.
Yeah, I agree. We've hit a point in wrestling where people will want to go to WWE instead of have to go to WWE to make a living. There's so many other options out there to make a living. If you're a good indie star, that it goes from a need to a want now. Now, Will Ospreay's one of them. Will Ospreay's probably making well over 6 figures doing what he does a year. That's great. And he's happy where he is. That's fantastic. I'm not gonna say he should go to WWE because I'm enjoying watching him do what he's doing, and I'm gonna enjoy the hell out of him wrestling Okada at the anniversary show. But yeah.
What I was about to say was Okada versus Ospreay should be absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
I honestly totally don't think Okada can keep up with Ospreay. I really don't. I honestly do not think he can keep up with Ospreay. But Ospreay with his injuries, Russell Okada. I mean, being dead honest, I mean, sure, Okada has the bigger name. Sure, Okada has the heavyweight title. But if we're being really fucking honest here, Ospreay can outlast Okada. So I really want to see how they're going to book this.
Yeah.
Are they really going to have Okada beat him in just a regular Okada match, which is a classic as always, but like just, I don't know, just somehow Ospreay keeps in it, or are they just going to do it as a tie or something like that?
Yeah.
Is there a time limit on this match?
60 minutes.
60 minutes. There's no way they're not going the full 60 minutes.
No. Nah, they'll save that for your Omega Okada stuff. I don't think we'll ever see an Omega or another time limit draw in the next decade unless something major happens or they do a major angle. But, yeah, I'm excited to see Okada and Ospreay. This is one matchup I've really wanted to see. Ospreay is one guy I really want to go heavyweight. Taichi's going heavyweight against Naito, and I love Taichi. And I wanted to see him go heavyweight too, but Ospreay is the guy I would choose if one guy had to go heavyweight, even if it's for one night. And honestly, I don't know. I just don't like seeing the junior heavyweight champion lose. But I don't want to see the heavyweight champion lose. So I'm interested to see how they book this. I think Okada's going to go over, but I would not be opposed to Ospreay going over, is the thing.
But honestly, do you think they're going to put Ospreay over Okada?
No. I wouldn't be opposed to it. I just don't think it's going to happen after the tear he's been on. They tend to save their Okada losses for the G1 because you can at least make the point that this is such a grueling tourney that he has to lose once or twice. Otherwise, he's just going to be a broken down man. You know, they tend to save their Okada losses for these tourneys, but, you know, he's been putting on all these 30-minute matches, and maybe one of these times outside of the G1, it's time to pull the trigger and say he just couldn't keep up with this man. If there's one man he probably couldn't keep up with in all of New Japan, it'd be Will Ospreay. So,
yeah. I mean, if it happens, ecstatic.
Yeah.
But if it happens, Ospreay to go up to the heavyweight division, and I don't want him to. I want him to stay junior champion for a little while longer. And then, if they're feeling risky, have him go for the U.S. or the Intercontinental. I just don't want him going for the heavyweight title yet, because honestly, they're not gonna. Nobody's not gonna believe he can be heavyweight champion because of Will Ospreay and his stature. They're gonna believe it because they're so behind Okada to the point where you know damn well he's not gonna win. And there's nothing wrong with that. Okada is the man in New Japan. It's the truth. He's absolutely one of the best wrestlers, if not the best wrestler in the world. But still, I have to give it to Ospreay where it is the point of this. He is talented, he has a great look, and he is absolutely one of the best workers in the world. Sure, he has not much character work. I mean, he does, but he doesn't. I mean, he's a high flyer, but he's kind of a jackass. And I don't know how the hell to describe Ospreay, but I will say this. Beats Okada. There's no way he should lose that championship until Wrestle Kingdom 13, period.
Yeah. If he were to get pulled over, there's no way that, say, he could lose to someone like Beretta or Chucky T or someone random that gets thrown in a match. Like, no offense to either of those two, but it's just something you can't do, you know, if they were to do this. So they have to be cautious about what they do, I guess. All right.
Hold on, I'm going to put this in your ear first. Hold on. But imagine this, though. Wrestle Kingdom 13 for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship.
What is it?
Hear me?
No, you didn't. I didn't hear either.
Oh, gosh. My mic is tripping or something, but I said Will Ospreay versus Rey Mysterio for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. Boom.
There you go. I agree. I'd agree with that. I don't know. Yeah. That'd be a high-profile match, and it's something where I think Ospreay could get a major win there. You know what I mean? I don't want to see Rey Mysterio, like, go on and hold the title by any means. I mean, if he did, I guess it'd be okay, but I'd much rather see Ospreay be put over in that match, but who knows? We got time. I mean, they'll have time to figure this out. Jido is a fantastic booker, and I'm sure he'll figure out a way to where Okada and Ospreay ends in a satisfying fashion. Some various news. We were talking before the podcast. There was a rumor that has come out about Jeff Jarrett in the Hall of Fame. For those who don't know, Jeff Jarrett walked out on the company many years ago while holding the Intercontinental Championship. He refused to drop it until he was paid in advance by Vince McMahon in a housekeeping match against China. He finally did get paid, but his bags were pretty much right next to the door. He went out, had a match with China, and left right after and was never seen again. But Jeff Jarrett will go into the Hall of Fame over Vince McMahon's dead body. I just want to make that very clear. There's no way. There's no chance in hell that it's going to happen. And if it does, I'll easily eat my words, because I guess there's always that 0.1%, but you know what I mean. Just a little preview for NXT tonight that's taking place in an hour and 20 minutes on the WWE Network. Ember Moon and Shayna Baszler in an NXT Women's Championship rematch from TakeOver Philadelphia. A United Kingdom Championship match between Pete Dunne and Roderick Strong, and the return of Aleister Black for the first time since he defeated Adam Cole at TakeOver Philadelphia. So that ought to be a good episode of NXT. I'll be watching. I don't know if I'll watch it right at 7, but it'll be a good show. Just a little update on Big Cass. Big Cass tore his ACL 6 months ago against he who must not be named on Raw in August. He is 6 months into a recovery that has been pegged for 9 months. He is back training at the Performance Center. He is not taking bumps. So he is definitely not cleared to return to the ring yet. I imagine if he does get cleared to the ring, it's going to be after WrestleMania. Ticket holders for Backlash got news yesterday that their SmackDown exclusive show their Raw exclusive show will now be a co-branded pay-per-view. And then rumors came out that all pay-per-views going forward will be co-branded pay-per-views, starting with the Backlash show, where we may get a newly reformed WWE draft. What is your guys' opinion on going back to 12 pay-per-views a year, all of them co-branded?
I think it's... part of me, I'd like that it's a good idea, and I know why they're doing it, because most pay-per-views have matches that have already happened at previous pay-per-views or on weekly shows, and they keep redoing matches. It gets boring over time. And being co-branded, they have both shows having their own matches on there, and they can give a little variety of matches instead of just the same ones over and over.
Yeah, I agree. I think people are blowing this out of proportion. A lot of people saying, no, this is the death of the brand split. It's not the death of the brand split. They did many co-branded pay-per-views with the old brand split. This is exactly what they did the first time they did the brand split. In the Ruthless Aggression era, they did the separate pay-per-views for on SmackDown. They didn't sell well on pay-per-view, and they made all of them co-branded eventually. This is a different situation with the WWE Network, but with ticket sales this time. Ticket sales, advanced ticket sales are down for these separate pay-per-views. The Big Four, obviously, have great sales, but there is just a general lack of interest, and they can't keep doing these same matches, and it's just going to be, I think it'd just be better overall. We just went to one a month, 12 pay-per-views. As a podcaster, I really would not mind that. It'd take a load of stress off. Those first two episodes were fucking hell, but yeah. If you can't tell, those first two episodes took a load out on me. John Morrison, Johnny Mundo in Lucha Underground, was asked who he'd want to work with in WWE, and he said this quote, there's a lot of cool matchups that are waiting for me in the WWE. I'd love to teach Roman Reigns how to work. Just kidding. Seth Rollins, unfinished business with The Miz. It'd be fun to get back in there and maybe do some Dirt Sheets episode with him. Me, Miz, Ziggler, and Zack Ryder would have a hell of a faction, I think. I've never really had a long program with Cena. That'd be a fun one. I have a feeling that Daniel Bryan will be back when he gets cleared. So, who would you like to see John Morrison work with if he were to return?
I'd like to see him redo a thing with The Miz. They always had somewhat good matches, from what I can recall. Also, Seth Rollins would. I mean, they're not the same, but they're pretty similar.
Yeah.
So that'd be a pretty good match. Or Finn Balor, honestly.
Yeah, I agree with all those. Ashton, you got any personal favorites you'd like to see out of John Morrison and back in the WWE?
I would say either Seth Rollins or I can't believe I'm fucking saying this, but Roman Reigns.
Hell yeah. I think I'd like to see him work a program with Shinsuke. I think that'd be really cool seeing that parkour style against the King of Strong style. You know what I mean? Johnny Mundo is locked in through Stevenson 7 of Lucha Underground. Last I last I checked. So we're just now taping season 4 this weekend. And once Lucha Underground starts getting new episodes, if you haven't watched Lucha Underground, go watch season 1 and 2. I think both season 1 and 2 are on Netflix, but go watch it. It's a fun show. It's supernatural. I mean, you got to take your disbelief and throw it out the window when you're watching it, but it's fun. It's got great matches. It's something that we may cover once it starts airing again. So we'll give you guys time and us admins time to catch up on it if we feel like it. Also, another thing that we've been maybe thinking of doing is maybe reviewing an old pay-per-view for this podcast. It's just something we've thrown around. So we'll throw a poll on the page and ask, what pay-per-view would you like us to watch and review over this sort of time? I don't know, next week. Probably not next week, but in the future, and we'll get to it at some point. But yeah, we're just throwing around ideas right now. We're a month in, so we will continue to try to be innovative and stuff. Travis, did you want to do our wrestler of the day?
Yeah. So February 14th. The one wrestler that was born on this day was Viscera, also known as Mabel and Big Daddy V.
Hell yeah.
He's a former hardcore champion one time, a former WWF tag team champion, and a former King of the Ring winner in 1995.
Better King of the Ring winner than Savio Vega, folks. We wanted to do favorite memories of Viscera, Mabel, Big Daddy V, and all his other gimmicks. I'll start with mine. 1999 Royal Rumble. This was Mabel at the time, was eliminated. The Undertaker then came out, and his ministry disciples took Mabel away, kind of carried him out of the stage area. So that's the one thing I kind of remember from his run. I tend to remember Big Daddy V's run, Viscera's run, and ECW, and the revamped ECW, and I kind of repressed those memories out of my mind a little bit. But yeah, God bless Big Daddy V. Rest in peace, Viscera. It's been a couple of years. He was hardly acknowledged. He had a opening on the one episode of SmackDown, if I remember. So they haven't really acknowledged him, and that kind of sucks. But you two, do you have any memories of Viscera?
Well, I like really any of his stuff that he did with Lillian Garcia. That was just hilarious.
Yeah.
So, reason why they're not mentioning him, and a reason also why I don't think that he's going to ever, well, I'm not going to ever, but I won't be in the Hall of Fame, is because his wife, I believe his wife, sued WWE.
Oh, yeah. I actually kind of remember that. I also don't know if he's a part of that concussion lawsuit. For those who are wondering why Daniel Bryan isn't cleared, like, right now, by the way, it's 95% the concussion lawsuit that's currently going on in WWE. That's, like, a big factor. And there's some big names on that lawsuit, and they have to appease those people. So clearing Daniel Bryan after forcing him to retire would not be the best look. But yeah, I do remember the wife thing pretty clearly. She made some disparaging statements against WWE after they failed to mention him on Raw, so they gave him that opener on SmackDown, the in remembrance of Viscera thing. But yeah, you wanted to talk about Lucha Underground, Travis?
Well, real quick, Ashton, do you have any memories that you want to share or favorite memories of Viscera?
Just remember him humping the shit out of Jonathan Coachman, so.
That's a hell of a memory, bud. That's a hell of a memory. All right.
Lucha Underground. They're filming in Los Angeles on Friday, February 23rd through Sunday, February 25th. Oh. Really a lot of information about that. But yeah, it's next weekend.
Next weekend? Oh, I said this weekend. Yeah, next weekend, Lucha Underground Season 4 taping starts. A lot of big names that are not going to be on this season. Alberto El Patron, Rey Mysterio, some names that you might have been inclined to seeing. not going to be on there. So, but Lucha Underground is always a fun time. It's free taping. It's first come, first serve. I think you have to get, I don't know if you have to get tickets beforehand or if you just walk up and they hand you a ticket, but they tend to, space tends to fill fast. But if you want to head to the Lucha Underground tapings, they're free of charge, and it's a fun time of wrestling. It's a they're long tapings, about 4 hours each, but it's usually, from everything I've heard, it's usually a fun time for everyone, and it clearly comes across that way on TV. The crowd is usually lively and stuff. I think that's going to do it. Anyone have anything else they want to add? I see Aaron never showed up. But
but he didn't say anything. But another thing with the Lucha Underground, it has a lower budget this season because, well, clearly financial issues and stuff.
Yeah. So just expanding on that for a second, Lucha Underground has kind of been in this limbo ever since the end of season one. Even if every season is kind of are they or are they not going to come back situation because of financial status, and the El Rey network obviously isn't the biggest network. Their producers love the show. They love the show. They love doing what they do. They love creating this stuff, but yeah, they're under strict numbers, and they've been in financial trouble before, and they've ended up getting the money they've needed every time. But I'm glad they're heading into season four and everything's working out well. But yeah, I'm inclined to believe there's a lower budget this season, absolutely. So I don't know if that's going to come in the way of TV production. I don't know if that's going to come in the way of some wrestlers not coming back. Obviously, their biggest star would be like Pentagon Jr. and their commentary team of Matt Stryker and Vampiro and stuff like that. I don't know paying wise what the issue would be, but yeah, I absolutely believe the lower budget stuff. But like I said, season one and two of Lucha Underground. Season one of Lucha Underground is probably one of the best wrestling shows of all time. In all honesty, go watch it on Netflix if you get the shot. But anything else from either of you?
That's all. That's all I can think of.
All you can think of, Ashton. You got anything? Nope.
Oh, I got two things to report, actually. At Elimination Chamber, when Ronda signs a contract, she's actually going to be in an angle during that segment. So,
yeah.
Contract signing, because that's going to tell whether if she's facing Stephanie and Triple H or if she's getting a women's title match. So
yeah,
check out that when it happens.
Yep. I assume at this point, I think they're going Stephanie McMahon and Triple H versus Ronda and either Rock or Braun, and I'm inclined to think it's going to be Braun. But do you have anything else? One other thing?
For you that are actually kind of worried about the Cena Taker match, it is absolutely totally a lock. The reason they did not actually put it up or set it up at Raw 25 is because it was the only place they could set up Cena versus Elias, which is stupid.
That's, yeah.
Raw matches, which is retarded. I mean, that isn't something you need to build to. You could just have it on the card that night. I mean, it is like it needs any incentive.
Yeah,
absolutely a lock, and they're gonna set it up sometimes in the next couple weeks, so we can have a storyline headed into New Orleans. But yeah, that's pretty much it for me.
Yeah, in case you didn't catch it during the Raw review when I gave that hint, his WrestleMania line about WrestleMania bringing legends from the dead was obviously a big indicator. But they're running the storyline of, I have to get to WrestleMania, and your name is John fucking Cena, you're getting to WrestleMania regardless. But I guess if they have to run the storyline, he'll call out The Undertaker, and it's whatever. Hopefully it's a good match. Hopefully Taker's hip surgery went well, and he's in the shape he can be for this match. But
hopefully, I don't want to see him getting slaughtered and putting his body through all that damage.
Yeah. I honestly think the Roman Reigns thing was the perfect ending. If it had to be anyone, or if it had to be a moment, it was probably that. But if we're going to see one more Taker match, I hope it's balls to the walls. I hope it's a great one. Well, that's going to do it for Top Rope Talk Episode 4. A little even shorter than last week at this rate, a minute 15. No Aaron. He never showed up from his cat nap, so that's whatever. We'll bring him back next week. From me, Matt, from Travis, from Ashton, kind of a loopy episode because we're down a guy and some misinformation got in the way, and I've had a long day. It's been a long day of taking care of things. I'm heading home tomorrow, so I've been running rapid. So I'm sorry for any mistakes that were made, anything I forgot, especially during the reviews. But all right, from me, Matt, from Travis, from Ashton, and from Aaron, who is not currently here, thanks for listening to this, you guys, and we will see you next Wednesday. Thank you, guys.